The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
KNUS Denver, a Salem Media Group station. This is Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We're back for hour two of the show, and it is so good to have you along. We got one line open at 303-696-1971. Really appreciate the patience of callers. Did not have Congressman Ken Buck scheduled to be on the show today, but he and Congressman Andy Biggs just released a piece. Came out, I guess, midnight this morning, and you can find it in the Washington Examiner. If you follow me on Twitter at Randy Corcoran, I have retweeted the piece. I've tagged Congressman Ken Buck in it as well. The title of the piece is Anthony Fauci Helping or Hurting? And Congressman Buck made himself available to talk about this with us right now, and he joins us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Randy.
Hey, thanks for sending me this piece. I was unaware of it, would certainly not have seen it until after the show, and making yourself available to come on and talk about it. I've read it during one of the breaks. It is fascinating. We've been talking about it in the first hour, you know, the consequences of some of the decisions that have been made. And so I really want to dig into this with you. Before we do, have you and your family made any special kind of plans with regard to Easter? Will you be getting together? Will you be staying apart? How are you responding?
Well, in spite of my kids not wanting to see me, I will be with them over Easter. But yeah, I'm looking forward to being at my daughter's house and celebrating Easter. She has this monster of a 3.5-year-old son, and he is out hitting the tee ball around. Although tomorrow may be a little cold for that, we'll see. But I just absolutely cherish my grandkids and looking forward to seeing them for Easter.
Do you ever wear a mask when you're out in public?
A lot of people would like me to for other reasons, but no.
Well, I've been telling you that for years, Ken. I mean,
yeah, I know you have. You say I have a face for radio. I remember that, but no, I have worn a mask once or twice when I have done food drives, and strangers are driving up in cars and handing food off to me and whatnot. But I have not worn a mask other than that. I'll be getting on a plane on Monday and heading back to D.C., and I have no plans on wearing a mask.
Do you have any insight into who the president is going to appoint to this economic recovery or reopening panel that he's putting together and said he'll announce, was it Monday or Tuesday?
Yeah, I do not know who he plans on. I actually had a very nice conversation last night with Mark Meadows. We talked about some of the issues in Colorado, and I expressed to him my thoughts that are in the op-ed in the Washington Examiner, but I didn't ask and don't know, and really I'm sure that being President Trump, he will surprise us with the brilliant minds that he puts together on a panel like that.
It really is true that he surrounds himself with people who are considered to be the best and the brightest. He did that with this health panel, the doctors who've been showing up at these daily press conferences, and I'm sure in his mind he selected people who had the most knowledge on diseases, infectious diseases, and all of that. But they also brought a very limited perspective, a very narrow tunnel-visioned perspective, and in your piece in the Washington Examiner, Is Anthony Fauci Helping or Hurting?, you zeroed in right out of the gate on a very important sentence, a very important comment from Dr. Fauci. Let's start it there.
Sure. He talked about the fact that, you know, it's inconvenient is the word he used for our economy and for our society. And it's not inconvenient. It is absolutely devastating to our economy to go through what we're going through right now. There are people who would argue that it's necessary. There are people who would argue it's not necessary, but it is devastating. And to use the word inconvenient really is a window into the thinking of a doctor who has spent his life, frankly, curing diseases and helping people recover from diseases, and not an understanding of the long-term consequences to a society, a country, a world, when economies collapse.
It's phenomenal, too, and this didn't really come up in your piece. I'm sure it will in future pieces, but we've now written a check, a blank check, basically. You can put as many zeros in there as you like. It used to be $1 billion was a lot of money. Now we talk in numbers of trillions of dollars just for the first couple of so-called stimulus or stabilization packages that have been put together. Nancy Pelosi and Republicans as well are already talking about round four. No consideration at all to the long-term, and I mean decades long-term consequences to indebting our kids and our grandkids to those massive sums of money all at once. And there's no consideration of that at all. It certainly doesn't get into Dr. Fauci's mind when he talks about the inconvenience of literally shutting down the world for now weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, Randy, where if we put a group of people together as opposed to a Dr. Fauci or a Dr. Birx, if we put a group of people where we would have this discussion about, but wait a second, the suicide rates are going to go up. But wait a second, as unemployment increases, are we going to get those people back to work? What are we doing to young people who see the bailout mentality that we are developing in this country? And again, it is a serious problem, and people are dying. But there are other ramifications from the strategy that's been adopted. And I'll tell you one other thing, Randy. I think it's very dangerous when we have one group of people at one level of government, the governors, who are deciding what the shutdown policies should be. And we have another group of people at another level of government, the Congress and the president, who are making the decision to pay for the decisions of the governors. The governors right now aren't talking about, well, we need to raise taxes to pay for this. They're just looking at the federal government and saying, hey, we need you to go into more debt, trillions of dollars of more debt to be able to pay for this.
Your piece in the Washington Examiner, we're talking with Congressman and Colorado GOP Chairman Ken Buck, is Anthony Fauci helping or hurting? And you remind us that 2 weeks ago it was 3.3 million unemployment claims. Last week, 6.8 million more. And then this Thursday of this week, an additional 6.6 million. We're talking 17 million people filing for unemployment right now. This is what Dr. Fauci referred to as a economic or societal, quote, inconvenience. It's absolutely terrifying. And it has been great that Donald Trump, in every one of these press conferences, has still pushed back and said, we're not designed to be shut down. America's vibrant. America needs to be reopened. We're going to reopen as soon as we can. And it sounds like he's dead serious about maybe putting the focus on that next week when he puts together this economic panel. But the consequences of this and allowing medical decisions to overrule the extenuating circumstances or consequences of this, Ken, of businesses closing down, never to reopen again. People docilely for weeks now just agreeing to a governor's edict that we all stay at home, understanding that we've probably really nipped some of the curve of this bug substantially right now. But we're not doing anything to prepare for when it may come back in the fall, when we get back into flu season again. Are they going to shut it down again, write another $7 trillion check? I mean, is that even being talked about in Congress right now?
I don't think it is, and I think that's really the point. The point isn't if we lived in a perfect world, how would we isolate everybody so this disease wouldn't spread? The point is, how do we develop a strategy so that we can isolate those most at risk, nursing homes and those with pre-existing medical conditions, but at the same time go about our business? Do we wear masks to work? Do we do we require restaurants to have every other table free? Well, what do we do to those who are otherwise healthy and can interact so that we can go on with life as sort of a new normal for a period of time and until a vaccine is developed for this disease? And that's where I think the Dr. Fauci's of the world and others around the country have missed the point. It's not, if we gave you unlimited power and unlimited money, what would you do? What strategy would you develop? What we're asking these people is, how do we continue to thrive as a country and make sure that we, as the primary economy in the world, continue to fulfill our obligations in a worldwide economy? How do we do those things the best we can, understanding that there will be some other consequences to that? How do we do that and move forward? And that's the discussion I don't think we've ever had, that I think by the time we get to the fall, we will have. We will also have some medicines, frankly. We won't have a vaccine, but we will have some medicines that will be helpful by the time we get to September, October.
It is astonishing to me, even leftists, although I know they're driven by the political agenda, they say we've got to listen to Fauci, we've got to listen to the woman in the scarf, Dr. Birx. And yet, back in January, Dr. Fauci was saying, you know, this is a serious disease, but we don't need to worry about it too much in America. Then all of a sudden, this study, this model came out that said up to 2 million deaths worldwide. 500,000 in the UK alone, 510. Now that those models have been dropped down to predict just 20,000 fatalities in the UK. It's unbelievable. And then just over the last few weeks, they say 100,000 to 200,000. Now it's revised down to 75,000. And that was before they dropped it down to 60,000 deaths. Significant, serious, of course. But it's like our government does not trust the people to be smart, to understand how social distancing and hand washing and in some cases mask wearing can help, that older people or people with underlying health conditions should stay home. Instead, man, they just tell us to shut it down and we comply. And I don't know how much longer that's going to go on either.
I have to tell you, Randy, there are two events in my life that are significant that will be altered dramatically. One is tomorrow, Easter. And this the Holy Week that led up to Easter, drastically different than anything I have done in my past 61 years. And I really resent it. I understand it. I have been very reluctant to criticize Governor Polis in this situation, but I understand what's going on. I just really resent the fact that I cannot be with my fellow Christians in my church celebrating the resurrection of my Savior. And then the following week, next week, we have the Republican State Assembly, and that will be fundamentally different. It will be online, and people won't be able to get together to see Cory Gardner in person, to see we were hoping that someone like the vice president would come out for that. We are missing a lot of what is very important in America, in addition to the economy, in addition to the things that we will feel in a different way.
The social impacts are just uncountable right now. We'll be talking about them a lot during the summer as things start to open up and we see the ramifications, increases in domestic violence, increases in child abuse, all of those kinds of things. And yet, you know, the thing could be back in September, October. So we do have to come up with different ways. We also have to have more and more people step up and speak out against just simply complying with the edict of a governor constitutionally, whether that's even possible for him to give these kinds of orders, because we're going to have to deal with this again in the fall very much and very most likely. And so it makes me very concerned. And it also worries me that when you talked about the state assembly, you didn't mention the very important in-person meetings with Republican National Committeemen candidates.
Very good point, Randy, and we have some outstanding candidates. As the chair of the state party, I can't take sides, but I can tell you that I am really looking forward to that election, and it's an important election because it represents Colorado, has its representation on the national stage, and so I wish you the very best of luck in that.
Well, I appreciate that. And the last point I want to make while we've got you here, Congressman Ken Buck, also Colorado State GOP chair, is that the numbers that we're getting of the deaths that are being reported in America are also exaggerated, because Dr. Birx has come out and medical professionals and even governors have adjusted their regulations in their states. Ohio comes to mind. If people die and they have COVID-19 in their system, even if they died of a heart attack or some other pre-existing condition, old age or whatever, if COVID-19 is even present in their blood at the time of their death, it's being called a CCP, Chinese Communist Party virus death. And that's outrageous. We have the capability of distinguishing between COVID being present at death versus COVID being the cause of death, and which really lends to the conspiracy theories and the people who are saying, wait a minute, is there a bigger activity going on, you know, world government, World Health Association, all of those folks that are trying to make us think a certain way about this thing. It's very, very concerning.
It is, and I don't know if you saw the Brit Hume piece on Fox News a while ago, but Brit Hume was talking about the difference between dying from prostate cancer and having prostate cancer when you die. Evidently, a very large percentage of men have prostate cancer in their system when they die, but they don't die from prostate cancer. It's something that you can live with for years and years. And the same is true here. People are dying from, the chemo that they're taking, and then they get the COVID-19. So we don't measure that. And we also don't measure, and Dr. Birx said she would not release the statistics, and I hope someday that we get this, on the number of people that died in nursing homes, or she said that it's clear that the fatality rates can be tracked by age band. But I think you can even go further than that and see that people at, you know, over 80 years old with pre-existing conditions are, you know, at one rate, and people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s that are otherwise healthy are in a completely different rate. And that's something I think, if we're ever going to analyze this with good public policy, we need that information.
Without a doubt. Well, I could always keep you forever. You weren't a scheduled guest today, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Really appreciate you making aware of this excellent piece in the Washington Examiner. You and Andy Biggs got together. Is Anthony Fauci helping or hurting? I know I'll see you soon from a distance, and really appreciate all of the work you're doing in the state and without. We'll have you back on again soon, Ken.
Look forward to it, Randy. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. And we're going to get to some calls here real quick. We'll push the break a little bit since people have been waiting so long. We'll also talk to State Senator Jim Smallwood, who actually went through the Chinese Communist Party virus experience. I think he's fully recovered right now. But let's jump in first with Chuck. Chuck in Denver, who's got an opinion about Dr. Fauci as well. Chuck, welcome.
Thank you. Listen, you know, I've been, everybody in the U.S. has been following the edicts and stuff of the White House and Dr. Fauci from day one. So looking at this Dr. Fauci, I was never aware of the person. I didn't know what his philosophy was, you know, his track record as a doctor. But the more I look into Dr. Fauci, I'm 100% convinced that he's rogue and he's bad for this country. Why? Because a couple things. He's pro Big Pharma. He's pro WHO. He's pro Bill Gates. And he's a typical doctor coming under the Big Pharma philosophy of okay, we're going to administer drugs and so forth. And there's studies that say a couple drugs, that hydrochloroquine and azithromycin, or seem to be working. With this stimulus package, they're spending trillions, and I'm thinking this might be right, maybe wrong, but if they administer everybody a $20 or $30 prescription, they could have avoided this $2 trillion. Will that work? Remains to be seen, but I have a lot of faith. And then these Dr. Fauci, when Trump brings this up to him, well, we have an alternative treatment that's relatively inexpensive. Oh, no, we got to do this, and we got to do that, irrespective of the economy, like you mentioned. Chuck. So I'm thinking if there's a philosophy, I would probably try to administer a lot of these alternative drug treatments. Are they safe? I think so. They've been around for a long time. But again, Dr. Fauci just absolute adamant that this doesn't have a long-term study. BS.
It's a great call, Chuck. And I want to tell you that, I was concerned with Fauci when he rolled his eyes, when Trump talks about a deep state, when you look into Dr. Fauci's connections, support of folks in the World Health Organization, Bill Gates Foundation, all of those kinds of things, because whether they're doing good in some ways or not, all of those three people or organizations that I just mentioned believe in large government. They believe in one world government. They believe that their dictates should trickle down to each and every one of us individual citizens in our own cities, counties, and states right here in Colorado. And that is a tremendous concern. And we're also not developing any herd immunity. If we're not getting together, then people are not actually getting exposed to this virus, and those who can develop antibodies and then no longer be threatened by it can get back to work, all of that. One thing that I think will be a tremendous help for us is it looks like these antibody, they're going to be able to start using antibodies, testing people for antibodies, and if they have them, then they'll know that they're safe to go out and about and be around others, whether they have this virus or not, and that is going to be very useful as well. All right, Joyce and Jim, sit tight. Don is on the line now, too. We will get to your calls. We're also going to talk on the other side very briefly with Senator Jim Smallwood about his experience as a victim of the Chinese Communist Party virus. So with full lines, I hope everybody will stay put, stand pat, sit tight. I got to say something there. It's 1023. I'm Randy Corcoran. You're listening to 710 KNUS.
We now return to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Okay, some of this bumper music is so good, I would love to let it play out, but we've got full lines and Senator Jim Smallwood standing by, who was a victim of the Chinese Communist Party virus. We'll get to him in just a minute. But I have been promising Biden gaffes. They're so short. This is your Democrat. Now, not really even the front runner, just he's going to be the nominee. Very little doubt about that, unless there's some kind of a floor fight at the Democrat convention. But here is Biden gaffe number two.
The coronavirus is not his fault, but the way in which we responded to it is his problem. He is the commander in chief. He should be taking full responsibility, not blaming everyone. It's always somebody else's fault. He is the commander in chief. He should organize this.
It's not his fault, but he should take responsibility, and to try and paraphrase Joe, which isn't that easy, and he should quit blaming everybody else. This is the best of the Democrat Party. Bodes very well for us in November. Before the hour is up, we will also play part two of Donald Trump's sort of Easter and Passover presentation from the Oval Office. We'll have the prayer of Bishop Harry Jackson as well. But Senator Smallwood agreed to stand by so we could talk to a couple of listeners who've been waiting way too long. We'll go to Joyce in Centennial. Joyce, thanks for waiting.
Hi. I've gone to some of your Tuesday evening meetings. Anyway, this is totally political control, as you all know, and we agree. And all the deaths are all from viral. But my question is, so are the funeral services overrun? Are they freezing bodies?
Well, you know, my dad died and we didn't have a service. He wanted to be cremated, so that made that part easy. But no services because I wasn't going to ask family to get on a plane or drive across state lines to try and come together and cover him. I was able to go to a funeral home, make arrangements for the death certificate and transportation of the ashes and all of that sort of thing. But it's a very tough circumstances. What bothers me is that people in power don't seem to think that the citizens are smart enough to take those precautions and keep themselves safe in order to slow down the spread and slow down the risk. Joyce, I really do appreciate the call. Joyce's line is open at 303-696-1971. You know, I don't mind these PSAs from Governor Polis playing on 710 KNUS, where he advises people to socially distance for a while, to wash your hands. That's important anytime, and I've probably changed my habits in that regard forever. But he took it so much further than that. We are ordered by the governor of the state to shelter in place. He decides what businesses are important and what aren't. I will bet you that this hospital that was thrown together at the convention center, medical center, very likely vast majority of those beds will be unused. These medical ships that were moved into harbors in California and in New York, they're not being utilized. The hospitals are not being overrun. In fact, hospital employees are being laid off right now because there's been a shutdown on all of the other non-COVID-related procedures and, things that aren't life-saving, life-threatening surgeries are all being postponed. My colonoscopy was postponed. It's okay. I'm not worried about it. But, just the overreaction. And, you know, people will say, well, yeah, but we've got to be ready just in case. Well, you've got to weigh in balance, and the economics factors in as well. And I've been asking the question, we'll ask Senator Smallwood here in just a minute, are you wearing a mask out in public? Are you and your family getting together for Easter? Once a vaccine is produced, will you take it? What if the government mandates that you take it? Such important considerations ahead. One more call before we get to Senator Smallwood. Jim in Highlands Ranch, been waiting way too long. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, Randy. I want you just a minute to crank it back 4 months, okay? It's December the 20th, and you heard on the radio this morning that you should get a flu shot because flu is going through the country. Now, flu is more dangerous, kills more people than this COVID thing. The symptoms are very similar. Now, would you, in your foggiest dream, think about not having Christmas with your family because there was flu in the city?
No, I wouldn't, Jim. I'm going to.
That's what you've got now.
I understand, but let me just say, I'm going to read a Facebook post before the show is over from my cousin in New York who got this disease and described it publicly, what she went through, because there is a level of seriousness and contagion that I think required a higher level of response. I don't mean governmental response, but caution by citizens, social distancing. Limits on numbers of people in stores, those sorts of things that I could live with for a while because of the contagion and the potential death rates of this thing, which appears to still be about 10 times higher than the flu.
You're ignoring the vast number of people that have had this disease and not had any symptoms at all. So when you take it across society, the COVID is not nearly as dangerous or debilitating as the flu.
Well, we don't know that public relations. Yeah, I think it is more debilitating if you get it, especially if you're older or have health risks. And I think it's much, much more contagious. So
the flu kills 60,000 Americans every year.
Yeah, it sure does.
And it does it exactly the same way by killing the elderly and the sick. It does exactly the same thing.
Jim, I really appreciate your view. I want to get to our Senator Smallwood interview now, but thank you very much for waiting, weighing in this morning on Wake Up with Randy Corporan. I appreciate it. All right, well, guess he's just mad because I had to let him go. But we do have Senator Smallwood waiting, and The other Jim's line is open, 303-696-1971. We've been full lines all show long. Welcome in, SD4, running for re-election in November, Jim Smallwood. Our first conversation on the air. Sir, I appreciate it. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's a beautiful Holy Saturday, and happy Easter to you.
Same to you. And when you hear callers like Jim, you know, minimizing or trying to equate the Chinese Communist Party virus to the normal flu, as someone who's had it and wasn't impacted very much by it, I understand. We'll talk about that in a minute. But what do you say to callers like Jim just a moment ago?
Well, Jim brings up a good point that I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of folks about, which is how accurate is our data? How accurate is it when it comes to COVID-19, and how accurate has it been with things like influenza A and B? Because Jim's point about and kind of reading between the lines about lack of data. For example, my kids went in to get tested once I had a positive result, and they were promptly turned away, even after spending, you know, several days with me in a condominium. So the question is, okay, if they didn't get tested because they were asymptomatic, were they perhaps positive, and we'll never know that. And so, you know, I think first of all, the public's getting really educated on epidemiology, and they're asking the right questions.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I'm sure as somebody who actually came back with a positive diagnosis, you spent a lot of time during your own quarantine looking at how people were reacting to the disease, how serious the symptoms became, comparing them back and forth to you know, different flus that we've all had over the courses of our life. Tomorrow it'll be 2 weeks since you had your diagnosis. Why don't you go ahead and tell the story real quick, and then talk to me about what you learned during your own personal examination of the facts.
Yeah, happy to, Randy. And what's interesting is, you know, after spending 3.5 years working at the Capitol in Denver, you learn pretty quickly that place is sort of a petri dish, right? There's tons of folks coming through there, battalions of grade school children, you know, touching everything, and anybody who's had kids know that they bring home all kinds of stuff from school. So we're sort of hyper vigilant anyways at the Capitol, speaking for myself and my colleagues. You know, tons of hand washing, tons of hand sanitizer, trying not to touch things unnecessarily. So I consider myself, and I think a lot of my colleagues would agree, sort of germophobes, at least during those 120 days a year to begin with. So the fact that somehow I was able to come down with it, this would have been symptoms that I was having on Monday with a mild to moderate fever, which then on Tuesday, which would have been, I believe, the 17th of March, probably more chills, fever, thinking, okay, well, I must have a cold, but, you know, I'm not coughing, I don't have the body aches, I don't have a lot of the other symptoms that people were talking about, so I'm sure it's not coronavirus. So this would have been Tuesday afternoon, you know, pretty good bout of chills for a few hours. My wife's sister, who's a nurse, called me and really sort of scolded me, saying, hey, you know what, you know, you work at the Capitol, you're around a ton of people, it would be really much more responsible for you, Jim, to go ahead and get tested. And even though I was already relatively isolated in a condominium in California, I said, okay, fine, we'll do that. Myself and my wife packed up. We went to the hospital, who had set up these outdoor cabanas specifically for COVID-19 testing, which strangely were basically empty when we arrived on the 17th. Got tested, so that was on a Tuesday late in the day. By that next morning, Randy, I felt literally like 100%, mercifully. Like, I had no symptoms any longer. Went for a nice long walk, like a 3-mile walk, no problems breathing, no sign of a fever. My wife was really good about taking my temperature, like every 45 seconds. And from that point on, just continued to feel better, have more and more energy every day. The following Sunday, so this was, you know, five days later, I got a call in the morning from the health department saying, hey, your result came back positive. Your wife's result came back negative, and here's the steps that we need you to take. We need you to stay isolated until the 30th of March. After that period has passed, you are, in our opinion, free to travel. You shouldn't be a health risk to anybody else, and you shouldn't be at risk of getting the coronavirus again.
So on the flip side, my one of my cousins who lives in New York, she's a TV producer. She's the first person that really started to turn me around on President Trump. Even though she's, you know, politically not aligned with him, she's been around him for years and years, flown on his planes, been to his weddings, traveled to Russia with him, and described for me that he is nothing like the media portrays him, you know, respects women, remembers things about you and your family when you come into his orbit, very thoughtful, good listener, all of those kinds of things. But she posted up, stay home, please. I've been lucky after a straight week of fever, so aggressive at times that I had to drag myself into a cool shower, shortness of breath that is as emotionally draining as it is physically. I am thankfully and hopefully on the other side and counting down the days I can come out of my self-quarantine. Please take this seriously. And she goes on. Did you learn anything while you were in quarantine about the differences between this particular strain of virus and the typical flus that would have you advise folks to continue their caution, that it is more aggressive, that it can be much more damaging to lungs and the way it attacks the body and all of that?
Well, there's no question that, at least in talking to folks who have called me, reading emails, speaking with the folks from public health, is that this affects different people in different ways. I have a dear friend of mine whose teenage son has been virtually laid up for weeks on end because of COVID-19, and this is a young, healthy, energetic kid who, you know, does not have underlying health problems. He is the kind of the picture of good health, and then this thing has basically crippled him for at least a month. I take it extremely seriously. I did it when my positive result came back. I tried to stay as far away from my own family as I could, because I was certainly scared to death that I might, you know, transmit it to somebody. So I took all of it extremely seriously. My family is taking it seriously. They don't go outside. I know you've been asking folks whether or not they wear masks. I go out, but I really, really, really discourage my family from going outside other than to get exercise pretty much by themselves. So this thing is no joke, the way it can impact different people. And so mercifully, my symptoms and my episode was really, really mild. I feel really blessed for that. But I know that that's not for everybody. It may be for the majority of folks, but yeah, it definitely is not for everybody.
All right. Well, Senator Jim Smallwood, when we get through this crisis and get back to more normal operations, as I know we will this summer, we'll have you back on to talk about your campaign to be reelected to Senate District 4. But I really appreciate you sharing your story with our audience on 710 KNUS today.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on, Randy. Happy Easter.
Same to you. All right, we've got full lines. We'll get right to them on the other side. We'll also play part two of Donald Trump's Easter prayer and comments from the Oval Office last night when we return here on 710 KNUS.
Now, back to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We're back with full lines, about 10 minutes to go until the top of the hour. Don, Chris, and PJ, sit tight. We will take you in the order that you have come in, I promise you. And very, very interesting. We had Ken Buck on unexpectedly because his new piece just hit in the Washington Examiner with Andy Biggs. They wrote an opinion piece, is Anthony Fauci helping or hurting? Fauci refers to what's happening in the nation economically as inconvenient to Americans. He has focused directly, specifically on the health outcomes, of course, and then many others have very relevant and reasonable suspicions about some of his other motives. And, you know, we're not even talking about the fact that Apple and Google are talking about putting tracking apps, COVID tracking apps, on people's phones, and vaccines that may be able to, you know, transmit information. I mean, just science fiction stuff. But we are in the 21st century. I don't necessarily trust Bill Gates to inject anything into my veins. And the questions have been, you know, are you wearing a mask? Are you getting together with family for Easter tomorrow? When there is a vaccine, will you take it? And what if the government mandates it? Those are going to be big questions as we move ahead. I did promise that we'd hear part two of Donald Trump's Easter presentation from the White House, and this is where he introduces the bishop.
Almost 3,000 years ago, the prophet Isaiah wrote these words, "Darkness covers the earth, but the Lord rises upon you, and his glory appears over you, for the Lord will be your everlasting light." As our nation battles the invisible enemy, we reaffirm that Americans believe in the power of prayer. We give thanks for the majesty of creation and for the gift of eternal life, and we place our trust in the hands of Almighty God. I'd like to just wish everybody a very happy Easter. We're going to be celebrating that very, very special day, and it's going to be hopefully a very good weekend and a very productive weekend. And I want to thank everybody in our country and beyond for all they've had to put up with. 184 countries as of this morning are fighting this enemy, and we pray for them all. With that, I'd like to introduce Bishop Harry Jackson from Maryland, highly respected gentleman who is a member of our faith and a person that we have tremendous respect for.
And we'll play the part three prayer from Bishop Harry Jackson and President Trump's closing comments in the final hour of the show. But right now, what did I say? Don has been waiting the longest. Don in Colorado Springs, good morning. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Randy. And I will compliment the other callers. I'm starting to have doubts about Dr. Fauci. And, you know, he has respectability, but he's probably a cultural, likely a cultural leftist and progressive and liberal. And, you know, that should be taken with a grain of salt. He may be looking out for the best interests, but he's doing it in certain ways that could hurt the economy more than help it. And I honestly think that Jared Polis is looking for a way, and the other Democratic governors, to see if they can tank their state economies and put people on welfare and see if that can benefit the Democratic Party at their levels.
Listen, there are valid reasons for concern, and we see this now overbuilding of our medical resources. Meanwhile, anonymous texter sent in, Hillcrest Healthcare System Hospital is collapsing because COVID-19 didn't materialize much here. Not sure where here is. And they canceled elective surgeries. 600 employees laid off.
But hey, we can still have Planned Parenthood open and abortion on demand still. And I was listening to Mark Levin's show last night, and he had a guest on talking about the herd mentality, and you know, and how the COVID-19 virus could bite back based on the way we're handling it now. You know, just sheltering everybody and making sure that nobody gets it.
Exactly.
But, you know.
And Don, I've got to move because of full lines. But just imagine, and thank you for great comments. But just imagine, if we would have had elder people with underlying health conditions, shelter in, implement some social distancing, have stores maybe put limits on the number of people that come in, but still interact with each other. So the herd protections could build up from people who are healthy enough to deal with them. That's a ticking time bomb that we're awaiting now in September or October. Let's squeeze one more in with Chris in Lakewood. PJ, we'll get you on the other side of the top of the hour. Chris in Lakewood, welcome.
Oh, good afternoon, sir. You know, I'm just very concerned myself about Fauci and the bird lady. I think that Trump has painted himself into a corner here. And I think what he needs to do, otherwise he's going to be looked at in all directions. he needs to bring a couple of other specialists into the picture. I mean, two or three strong conservatives who are completely opposite of Fauci and the Bird Lady, and then make his move to get the heck out of it and open up the economy. I think that he's going to have nothing but problems here with Fauci. And the other issue that I have is what you see in the media every day. Everything is so blown out of proportion. They show these graphs comparatively with COVID-19 and the flu, for instance. And, you know, the COVID-19 graph is way beyond it. And then it shows, you know, like a dozen deaths or something. They're really very minimal amount of deaths. As you consider how they categorize him from a heart attack. Okay, you know, everything's COVID-19. I think he's got to make some moves here, and he can't waste too much time because he's painted himself into a corner.
Well, it's interesting, Chris, and we're at the top of the hour, so we'll have to probably leave it there. But I got a Facebook message this morning from Susie. She used that same exact language. The president listened to the wrong experts, got himself in a political corner. My reaction, though, was remember how quickly the narrative changes. And I believe that the narrative will change when Donald Trump, after he gets this economic reopening panel in place this week, when he starts really turning his focus to reopening the economy, the narrative will change. The left will still go crazy. Anybody that dies will be Trump's fault. We get all that. But the importance of getting people back to work and letting life continue in spite of some ramifications, maybe some more infections and all of that, it just simply can't be understated. Thanks for waiting. Great comments.
Oh,
we appreciate
thank you,
it.
Now.
All right. Take it easy. All right. Chris's line is the only open line we have. 303-696-1971. PJ and Jim in the third hour. And we're also going to spend a few minutes when we come back on the other side with my good friend, Ted Harvey, one of the smartest political operatives I know. He also seconded my nomination to become the Republican National Committee man, so we may talk about that for a minute as well. But everybody sit tight. We will get to all of your calls in the final hour. I'm Randy Corporan at 710 KNUS.
Hi, it's Peter Boyle. It's 5 a.m. Monday morning. Here we go at it again. Well, it's springtime in the Rockies. Got some snow. We came through a holiday weekend. And the talk begins again. The blame game begins again. Interesting people have said things like, well, how can we all take the kids and grandkids back to school when no one is inoculated? Will the virus return?
Peter Boyle's weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on News Talk 710 KNUS.